by Mark Zager, who is from Vestas Wind Systems in Denmark. Mark is a meteorologist, sorry, in plant siting and forecasting department at Vestas. He will talk about wind resource assessment and mapping. Mark, the floor is yours.
Okay, thank you. As Laurent introduced me, thank you. My name is Mark. I'm from Vestas Wind Systems, meteorologist background and foreground. I will talk for half an hour about making wind resource assessments, which implies quite many things besides just knowing the wind conditions. I hope you will like it, and I hope for some questions as well. I've been at the Vestas for about 6 years now, coming otherwise from the academic and weather service. It was quite a big change to actually apply what we are doing. Just a short introduction of where I come from. Vestas is the world's largest wind turbine manufacturer. The company that only produces wind turbines. There are some, of course, bigger firms that also do other things, but we just do wind turbines. With about 70,000 employees everywhere in the world, we have about 26,000 turbines constantly monitored. So there is data coming every 10 minutes and collected at our servers. Then the number of turbines that we have installed so far is about 50,000 and growing. And by doing that, we also try to earn some money. So this is a typical last year's revenue in billions of euros. So it's quite a big company. And why are we doing wind assessments? It's not because we would sell wind assessments to our customers. We are doing it mainly for ourselves to have an overview of where our turbines are going and to get some ideas what kind of products we need to develop and so on. So the talk I will give, it's from Vestas' perspective, but I will try to give it a little bit more general touch, so it will be interesting for everybody. I believe that's how things are done also elsewhere. Who, in principle, is doing resource assessment at our company? So it's a department. It's called Plant Siting and Forecasting, but we actually have a lot of different backgrounds. So we have small sub-departments dealing with siting and loads of wind turbines. So we have structural engineers, CFD modelers to actually have control over how turbines work in the turbulent environment and how this affects their structural suitability and how long they can actually survive in the flow. Then we have meteorologists. We have also meteorologists who do forecasting, weather forecasting, power forecasting. And you cannot survive without scientific computing nowadays and statistics. So it's all these capabilities that make a department capable or to lift it to a stage where a proper resource assessment can be done, which is much more than just wind speed forecast. And what we are doing is to actually are present in the whole lifetime of a wind turbine from design stage to the operations through like defining the wind conditions for prototype, for testing, for design, and then following it through the 20 years of the lifetime. So the great thing that results from that for meteorologists and for everybody is that when you are involved in planning and siting of turbines and assessing risks and resources of the conditions, is that you get a lot of feedback. So every time we do a siting project over there, we follow what happens with the turbines that are installed later through maintenance, through asset management, to actually following the data coming back. And then we improve our tools and methods. So our department is basically the center of the method development of our company. By getting this feedback, it's possible to actually improve the methods, learning things from experience, getting the knowledge, and eventually now and then, we can see some of this knowledge propagating backwards into the design of wind turbines. So this is the whole story. And yeah, it's quite complicated, but not so complicated still. Yes, so what is required for this kind of assessment to be done properly to a level where you can actually have some certainty in the results of it? So since a resource assessment is supporting many, many different activities, from siting turbines, selling, developing business, or going to different markets, you have to find out what wind conditions will be elsewhere in unknown countries, through product management, like developing new turbines, engineering, so keeping all these small details in turbines in order, and also working with customers and consultants, there is a chain of activities, of events, things that have to be done properly if one wants to have the final product, which is the best resource assessment you can get. So it's the whole story starts with actually looking for the potential sites where you could put the turbines. It also includes finding locations for measurement campaigns, because it's not random where you will put your mat mast. They're not so cheap. I mean, it's comparing to a whole wind farm, a mat mast is not expensive, but still, you will be surprised what kind of mat mast and what kind of locations they are put at. So it's important to design measurement campaign. Then the data that you collect has to be analyzed properly, so you must not introduce errors in data analysis as well. The correction that will bring the data that is measured into a long-term perspective, it's another thing where a lot of mistakes can be done. And then you have to do the flow modeling to actually get the whole picture of the site where you are, so to actually extrapolate the data, the measurements into space. Assessing loads, meaning that find out how the turbines will actually, yes? So typically, what is recommended is that for every number of turbines, like 10 turbines, you have to put on one mat mast, which is hopefully tall enough that the data that it collected are representative. So recommended height would be about 100 meters, and you have to measure wind at several levels, turbulence several levels, temperature at least at two levels, and everything else is a bonus. So, and it has to be designed professionally, properly, because that is the data you have. If you collect wrong data, your errors will be felt in the next 20 years and will cost you money. So that's the campaign. Right. So, and as you see, all this chain, there is a lot of possibilities where errors can happen, and they just accumulate. So in order to have a good final assessment, you must do all the things properly. So. So how good these things can be done and what is required to do it? I will go back to an analogy with art. So if you just go to a museum with a little hole and you see a picture and you see that, you don't know anything about it. So the question is, how do you know that this is a good piece of art? Or is it at all? So the answer is that basically you don't know until you can see the big picture. And that's also important in wind assessment. So in resource assessment for a wind farm, planning, you have to have an overview of everything that can go wrong and that can go well at your project. So basically to get the full picture. Going back into engineering and wind farm planning, the small square that you saw in the first picture corresponds to this big photo. You can immediately number a couple of things that can go wrong in this project. For example, for one, the mat mast is not tall enough. Then it's located in a very strange area. And finally, who would build a wind farm here, right? Maybe a solar farm. So how to work with that? How to work with people, customers, not customers, but yeah, okay, indirectly with customers, to develop a story, to make a convincing argument of a good or bad side this is. So the reason, the answer in this is that you just have to use all the data that you can have. And I don't only mean the data that you collected at the place for previous couple of months. You have to make use of everything that you have learned so far. All the experience from previous wind turbine projects, from the measurement campaigns elsewhere in the world, and not speaking of models, which is a big thing. So all this data has to be managed properly in order to actually get this big picture as good as you want and as it needed. And actually, on this slide, that is the only wind resource map that I will show today. That's the global mean wind speed at 100 meters above ground. And of course, it's developed by using a weather model. But if some of you work with wind energy already, and some of you still will, you will often hear us to say, people, yeah, but models, this is just model, right? So it's not real. And then what can you say? You can say that, yeah, basically the model is where the most of the data is collected. So there is about, there's a number of millions of observations collected every day, inserted in the analysis of the atmosphere globally, and then processed and stored to be used later. So all these maps that we are producing and are shown, kind of atlases and resource maps, they are based on millions of kinds of data. So it's not just model, it's much more. Okay. And just a simple example, what data management means, I'm showing two different wind regimes. So you can see monthly mean wind speed for two different sites with exactly the same yearly average, but these regimes actually induce much more peculiarities in how the turbines produce. So for example, as a fact, the response of the power on the turbine is not linear to the wind speed, of course. So lower wind speed, during the lower wind speed periods, the turbine will produce very, very little, and during the high wind speed, it will produce much more. So the total production of this dark blue regime could be much higher than the light blue, but you must know this in advance. If you don't know that, if you just work with averages, many things can happen. So one thing, very simple example, but I think telling a lot. So this is an extension of the previous one, just showing how wrong things can go if you just do your measurements and do not do things properly. So if you're oblivious of what happened in the past, of what wind regime your measurements are actually sampling, you can get into problems. So for example, just consider the low wind speed measurements. So if you had a met mast on a site for even 3 years, you would say, oh, I have three years of data, I'm safe. It can happen, and this is a real like time series of 25, 35 years of data of yearly mean wind speeds. There were three consecutive low wind speed years during which you could measure your data. So without knowing what is the real long-term representative wind at this location, you can actually get much wrong, big errors in the estimations of your production, and not only production. Also, wind turbines are designed by classes. So there are classes of wind turbines that are engineered to fit into some kind of a wind regime. So we have low wind, middle wind, high wind regime turbines, just to simplify things. So if you, based on the measurements in the 7.4 meter per second range, you would put on this turbine. And then when you see that the wind is actually much stronger, the turbine will suffer and will eventually break. So without getting the homework done, you could get into big problems later. So, and what happens now? Now I have my wind measurements. I have done proper data analysis, long-term corrected everything. So I think I know my wind conditions and turbulence conditions and all the risks properly. But still, we want to put, let's say, 100 turbines in this 10-kilometer circle between the three met masts. And that's when we need wind modeling, flow modeling. So we must get a complete picture of resources and risks, not only at the mast locations, but also in between. So, and now this is a whole new science field, how to do proper modeling of the wind to be really good for putting turbines in. So now you can see that where the met masts measured, wind conditions are different, and then you can use models to extrapolate things in between. So you must get a physical, consistent picture of the conditions across the site. And then if you have something like this, and even more complicated, you can then decide where I will put my turbines. And you also know how well they will operate. what kind of risks they will see. Is the turbulence maybe too high somewhere? Is it maybe icing that is a risk? Everything should be considered. Okay. And speaking of modeling, this is just an example with numbers to impress you. How many simulations of different kinds a department like ours performs within 1 year. So from the top down, the complexity grows. So we start with simple steady CFD. This is computational fluid dynamics simulations. This is basically just to adjust the flow to the terrain, getting out wind speed and turbulence. So that's simple. It could be done automatically. I mean, we must have good models and some people who can do it, but yeah. And then when the conditions that you see are more and more complex, or if you want to have your analysis which is more specific, then you have to add complexity in your simulations as well. So also the computational demand of the simulations, of course, grows. So you cannot afford to do the full park LES models with turbines included and everything for more than a couple of wind farms every year because it's just too expensive. So you have basically to choose your approach complexity sometimes in the process. So that's why we have defined this chain of processes where everything is done in a sequence so that everything new that you do will fit in there. Yes. So at the end we have run WRF LES model to do some specific analysis if it's required. So when all the other models fail, then you can use WRF. Who hasn't heard about WRF yet? Okay. The next thing, which is a good thing to have, is to be able to quickly assess to some level of certainty what kind of conditions you will see at your sites. Because sometimes, and quite, let's say most of the time, you have a project in a region area where you don't know so much about. So you must have some first guess, some first approximation of the conditions there. And this can be done, for example, by designing a global high resolution reanalysis or, let's say, climatology on mesoscale using different kind of mesoscale models. We're using WRF for this purpose, running it through maybe 20 years and storing all the data so that everybody that requires some kind of first guess of the conditions can access this database, pull out what they want, and having some reliable or more or less reliable estimate of where they're going to. And then they can decide how complex an analysis they would like to have further on. So because this is a huge thing to do, imagine global database of 3 kilometer grid with some pretty good coverage, it's about 2,000 terabytes of data. So it's not a simple thing to do. So we use some specific database storage systems, all that. And when this is in, you're just a short step, small step from, let's say, getting a temperature condition analysis for a country in the world you have never been before. So if you guess a country, there is a wind speed, yearly mean wind speed at 80 meters above the surface, and this is showing the risk of your turbines running hot. So there is a thing with wind turbines that, of course, there is a generator, it's a huge machinery, it produces heat, generates heat. And if the environment is hot, too hot for this heat to be like taken away out, then you will have to either derate your turbine or actually even shut down at certain temperatures. And this, by querying a database like that, you can actually have an idea in advance where in the world, in the countries, you will have some specific requirements for your wind turbine. So like in the purple areas, you know that if you install a particular turbine, you will have to also add some cooling equipment. So this can save you a lot of time, effort, and problems later when you find out that your turbine is shutting down because it's too hot. So it's all done by just sampling the mesoscale data from before. Another cool thing that adds to knowing wind resources very well is to get some idea of how the wake inside a wind farm looks like. Wind turbines, when they spin, they extract energy, and the deficit of energy and some surface of turbulence behind downstream the turbine is called wake. And these wakes are stubborn things. Sometimes in some typical conditions for, let's say, summer night or cold winters, in stable conditions, wakes will not dissipate as fast as some standard wake models assume. And this will incur a lot of losses in the wind farm where turbines are spaced tightly and these conditions appear often. So this is an example from a very high fidelity computational fluid dynamic simulation of what the losses due to wake would be in a wind farm that looks like that. And actually this is then, I think there are some measurements also included. Or this is maybe from the measurements even. So it's a real wind farm showing how strong wake effect can be. So you can lose half of the production on the turbines downstream because of these problems. And yes, I have an example also what wake is and how it looks like. This is a wind farm somewhere in the world that is made of 140 wind turbines and equipped with many math masts, which are measuring all the time. And so what we can do is to use the wind measurements from the anemometers on the nacelles that actually sample the wind at the turbine itself and make a map of it. So this is a composed wind speed map measured by the turbines during daytime. The wind is from the north. You can see there is like a 9 meters per second wind on top of the wind farm, but then the wind speed doesn't decrease drastically. So in the middle of the wind farm, you will still have 8 meters per second, 8.5 even. So in this kind of conditions, the wake loss will be moderate to small. But what happens a couple of hours later? The night fell, everything became stable. The stable conditions killed turbulence, and turbulence is required in order to replace energy that was extracted by the wind turbines. So this means that wakes cannot replenish their energy, and then they are just persistent. So we can see the first rows of the turbines, they get some wind. The conditions are similar, so it's winds from north, a bit stronger than during the day. But the rest of the wind farm is just empty, suffering from no wind. So this is the wake illustrated like that. You can do that. If you own a wind farm, a big one, you can just analyze your data and have these pictures. But what we do in the resource assessment phase is to try to get some idea how often these things happen. So if I put a wind farm in the middle of Kansas, how often will I lose half of production because of the wake? And you can, oh, it's not Kansas. You can make a map of Australia showing the proportion of time during the strong wind conditions during which the stable atmosphere can provide conditions for a strong wake effect. So you just analyze mesoscale data and get a pretty good estimate of how much wake you can expect. And then having that, you can go in and try to reshuffle your turbine so that you minimize the wake effect. So it all starts with data analysis, some brilliant ideas, and the computer and mapping software. So speaking of risks, I will jump over this pretty cool picture because I'm out of time almost. I just want to show that, there are many, many things that can go wrong when you put a wind turbine. For example, you can have freaky windstorms repeating every day, affecting your wind farm, where turbines will suffer because the wind changes very fast in direction. Or you can have very, very strong icing effects in Swedish mountains in the winter, where you have to install de-icing systems, and that costs money. So if you know that in advance, you can actually plan better. So I want to say that risks and the resources, they go hand in hand. You cannot have a good resource assessment unless you also know what risks are associated with these resources. So just to summarize, what is the final consequence of having the resources right is that you can actually put your turbines, optimize the choice of turbine, and put it on the right location so that it will produce as much as it can and that it will be guaranteed to survive for the lifetime, or at least you will have your service costs under control, because you can be as detailed and precise and ambitious as you want in your resource assessment. You can plan if you know the data well, how many generators you will have to replace during the next 20 years, and when you will have to replace it, or at which turbines generators will fail sooner, etc. So it's all there. Like, we have an interface software framework. It's called SiteCheck. It's basically you put your turbines, all the flow and everything is in the background, so the model knows everything. So when you put your turbine, and it will say it's green, green or red. No, if it's red, then you have to move it elsewhere to be able to guarantee survival. So, I think I can actually stop here. I have an open-ended presentation. I can talk forever, but yes, maybe I'll leave some time for questions. Thank you.
Don't forget to introduce yourself, please.
Irina Jalalova from NOAA. I have a question about the MESTMAST again. So you said that you installed it before the experiment, and each one, we call it the Met Tower, so it's more than 100 high, and you will use it during the farm construction and after that, right? All the time. And because it's on a scale 1 to 10 turbines, so you have several thousand of these all over, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
How do you use this data in a regular operational time? Do you use any simulation technique to the model in real time?
No.
No. Because why I ask you, because we had an experiment, we used the towers from WFIP experiment, and we use these towers, we simulate it in real time, and we find out that it's very helpful.
Yeah, maybe a problem with, in general, I think, in the industry is that data is not shared. So you have your own, like, we don't own MetMass as Vestas, as a company, we just see the data. So if one developer has MetMass there and they don't want to share their data and the other one has data there, it would be great if all the data was collected, like it is for the global weather services. In this case, now every developer, every owner has their own MetMass, is very jealous about them. So it's very little you can do for your own wind farm if you just have measurements from your. But yeah, totally point, yes.
My name is Kristen Larson from the Global Weather Corporation. And I was wondering, with your 26,000 turbines and all of the data, if you have learned anything about which models to use, and if there's anything, if there's models you use more because of all the data that you've collected, or if there's any improvements you've made in any of the models.
We like to say that we have all this data under control, we use it all the time. Well, we could use it all the time if we had developed and tested and validated the models that can actually use it. So I think we are quite in a early stage of getting all this data under control and using it properly. We are working on it, so we have some initial ideas how to use it, but I think it is coming. So there's a huge amount of potential in using this data. It's not perfect. Data has, it's a lot of pollution in it. So there is a lot of things you don't know and you have to guess, like wake, for example. But combining model and data, that's the future. Yes.
David Pozo from University of Jaén in Spain. What is the minimum time of measurement for a wind mass in order to continue with the development of the wind project?
It's reducing. So usually we would say 1 year, just to sample the whole cycle, annual cycle of the conditions. But we have seen techniques that actually enable also shorter time series to be put into context properly. Like UK Met Office has a product, it's called Virtual MetMast Plus, where they can just use a few months of data and link with the model background statistics to be able to actually use it in a long-term perspective as well. So a couple of months could be enough if your models are allowing for it. But to start with, I wouldn't say that less than 1 year is okay.
Going back to the map you showed where Vestas is working in a large number of countries around the world. What experience have you had with working with meteorological services when it looks like that country could be somewhere where you would be active for a long time, and if you could develop some kind of partnership, you could maybe get more data to improve what you can do over what's just publicly available for, you know, some of these applications?
Yes. So there are two things. One is that we normally do not work so much with the customers in these countries. So I would expect that developers and owners of wind farms, they have contacts with weather services to get data from there. And the other thing is that in our company, meteorologists have been around for less than for about 6 years. Before that, nobody cared about anything. So again, I would say it's a young thing.